All right, so let's move on to item 13, which is consideration and take possible action to adopt resolution 21-2021-5, excuse me, authorizing actions in compliance with Assembly Bill 197 and the Alameda decision. And Karen Levy, this is your item. The floor is yours.
Thank you. This item will be presented by myself, Karen Levy, General Counsel for SACERA, as well as Christina Dunn, Deputy Chief Executive Officer. And so I'll begin with a brief background. Some of this was mentioned earlier, but these are administrative actions that are contemplated in connection with the AB 197 case and the Alameda decision. The Alameda decision is a decision that was rendered by the California Supreme Court in July of 2020 in the case that challenged the constitutionality of AB 197. Of course, AB 197 was legislation that changed the definition of compensation earnable for legacy members. That's the compensation that is used for pension calculations by adding exclusions to the definition. And the Alameda decision held that AB 197 and the legislative exclusions were valid. And so they have been upheld. The court made that ruling, but also sent the case back to the lower courts with an instruction to the trial court to vacate its prior judgment. At this point in time, that case is still pending with the trial court, but we do expect that the trial court will abide by the Supreme Court's ruling and vacate the prior judgment that was entered in 2014. So in addition to that case, there are two other AB 197 related cases that are pending with the courts against SACERA. And so in that context today, we are recommending to the board to consider some administrative actions that flow from the Supreme Court's decision. And wanted a brief reminder that SACERA is a tax qualified plan. And so when we take these actions or consider them, we need to keep in mind the federal law, IRS guidance regarding any types of adjustments, as well as California law. And with that, I'll turn it over to Christina.
Thank you, Karen.
Yes, so the resolution that you have in front of you that's proposed today is to, as Karen mentioned, get us in line with the Alameda decision and AB 197. One of the items is to determine all member contributions attributable to excluded terminal pay items and on-call pay items made on and after July 12, 2014, and credit or refund all such contributions with the appropriate interest. The second item is to determine all overpayments of benefits made to retired members due to the excluded estoppel benefits and on-call pay items since July 12, 2014, and recover those overpayments from the affected members with appropriate interest, offset by the contributions that those members made on that pay item after July 12, 2014. And then determine appropriate adjustments to the future retirement benefits paid to the retired members in the item two above, and provide notice to those affected retired members. And these actions would put us in alliance in compliance with the Alameda decision. It does not affect members that retired during the stay period or the period prior to July 12, 2014.
All right, thank you, Christina. Are there any questions of Christina and or Karen at this point? Before we move to public comment, Harvey, I don't know if this is an appropriate time to ask you to address the point that Candace made, you know, regarding the context and constraints that are governing the possible decision that we can make in this matter.
Sure, happy to. As you heard from Paul Angelo's description in item 12. There was a period of time after July, the effective date for Sisera, which was July 12 of 14, that our plan, essentially the law, our plan said that a particular pay element was no longer pensionable for members retiring after that date, but we continued to collect contributions on that item for about a year thereafter, because it wasn't until the next actuarial report and the delay that it takes to implement that actuarial evaluation. So it took us about, took Sisera about a year to stop collecting contributions on a pay element that was no longer pensionable after July 12th of 2014. And that's one of the issues that this resolution deals with. The resolution says there will be refunds of those because collecting those contributions for that year was not consistent with the law or our plan document, and that's very important from the IRS standpoint. So the question is, and that has been raised, why not refund contributions that were collected in a member's career prior to that date, since it turned out when they retired that that element was no longer going to be counted? And the simple answer to that, and maybe it's too simple for people who want to have us consider the refunds, the simple answer really is that at the time that we collected before July of 2014, that we collected some contributions from employers and employees, that was a pensionable pay item that was in our plan, that was in the law, and we had an obligation to collect that contribution because it was the pay element was being used to actuarially project what the final benefits might be. And so it when we use the term pensionable, it's not that it every element of pay that is pensionable is not necessarily actually received by the member and counted as towards their retirement benefit when they retire. Our members make many contributions during their careers that may not be present in their final compensation period when they finally retire. As you know, there are a lot of pay elements. Safety members have quite a number of them. There may be motorcycle bonus that they receive. Hospital workers may receive a swing shift differential throughout their career. Those things are pensionable, and therefore we're required to collect contributions on those, notwithstanding the fact that when they finally retire and they pick their highest year of income on which they calculate their benefit, it may not include swing shift differential or motorcycle bonus because they may not have worked those swing shifts or ridden a motorcycle in their final comp year. So there's no refunding of contributions that we collected on, to stay with the analogy here, the swing shift differential or motorcycle bonus during their career, just because it wasn't counted in their final comp as pensionable when we calculated their benefit. So the answer, there's also a practical answer. The assumption that the 0.34 in aggregate can be used backwards to apply to employee contribution rates, as well as forward from when Siegel calculated it, is not an assumption that, as I understand it, Siegel is prepared to say is a valid assumption of the same contribution levels attributable to terminal, this element of terminal pay in prior years. They don't have the data to support that, is my understanding, and Paul can confirm that, if you will. My understanding is that they don't have the data to support any such assumption like that. And so we can't make the leap that aggregate number of 0.34% of pay for employees can be back tested as well as projected going forward. But from a legal standpoint and our tax compliance requirement, the period in which we can make a correction is when we departed from the law in our plan document in that period of a year after July of 2014, in which we continued to collect on something that was no longer in our plan as pensionable. Prior to that time, it was absolutely legitimate for Sisera to collect contributions on that pay element as all pay elements. So I hope that's useful to the board in addressing this question. Happy to respond to any other questions.
Well, and just if you don't mind, just reaffirming too, what you told us is we do not have the legal authority. And I know you sort of said it in I don't want to say a roundabout way, but essentially you have said to us that to be in compliance with the IRS, we are not allowed to refund those monies that were collected legally and based upon what rules were in place prior to that.
That's my understanding based upon the advice of your tax counsel.
Okay. And to members who are listening, a lot of us initially thought, well, gee, why, that seems fair. It only seems fair that you're not going to get this benefit. You paid into it believing you would. And the advice we have received from our counsel is, yes, you can feel sympathetic, but legally you are not allowed to provide that refund, even if it seems equitable beyond that point in time.
I would like to see a formal legal opinion on that, aside from, what is understood, because this is incredibly serious to a large number of our members. And the example that you use, Harvey, with respect to items that have been paid for but not necessarily used, if you... Often it has been the case that someone's final year, their highest year, has been greater in pensionable income than the years of these other items like a special differential or whatever. So who's going to complain about that? In this situation, you have people who've actually lost value in their pensions because of AB 197. So someone's best year, which may have included, could have included terminal pay and so forth, you're dealing with something completely different than what we usually have dealt with in the past. And so this is what people are quite upset about. And I don't think in our situation that example really holds water.
I appreciate the comment, and I also appreciate the feeling among many members that the rug was pulled out from under them. But the fact of the matter is it was the Supreme Court that pulled the rug out from under them, both on the legal and on the equitable fairness basis. It wasn't this board, and it's not this board. And I fully appreciate the disappointment that litigation was lost, that the Supreme Court ruled that there was no vested right to continue to have these things counted, and there wasn't a right since 2013, and the equitable argument failed in the same unanimous Supreme Court decision that led to this level of disappointment. I fully appreciate that, understand it as well. But we are a creature of a legal plan document that has been approved by the IRS for the purpose of giving or of assuring our tax qualified basis. And we don't have latitude to depart from that, despite the understandable sense of fairness that accompanies this conversation. I fully appreciate that.
Thank you, Harvey. Any other questions or comments on the item or for Harvey before we move to public comment? Seeing none, Christina, can we present the public comment that we have received on item 13?
Yes, we've received quite a bit, and then we do have one individual that has asked to appear on camera for public comment. So I'll read the public comment we received through the email first, and then we'll move that gentleman over.
All right. I'll remind the speaker at the time, but we do have a 3-minute time limit, but go ahead.
The first one is from Melissa Hagen. One, how are you calculating the money taken out of my paycheck for on-call and now my call does not count towards my retirement? Are you going to provide some kind of a spreadsheet with each pay period? Two, how is the money going to be returned to me since AB 197 broke contract law, in my opinion? Three, are you going to be considerate to me about tax implications? The second one is from Lacey Friedman. Dear members of the board, per Contra Costa County Employees Retirement Association Board of Retirement Policy governing the overpayment or underpayment of member contributions adopted 12/10/2014, your policy states that when a member has overpaid contributions, after discovery by CICERA and within a reasonable period of time after written notification to the affected member, CICERA will correct any overpayments. CICERA has known since AB 197 that your members have overpaid on items now deemed non-compensation earnable. Hence, since the date that each individual employee began paying into those items, that was overpayment by that member. I was mandatorily contributing since 2008. If I paid in and now get no benefit from that payment, that is an overpayment and you must reimburse me for all of my overpayments. Your fiduciary code of ethics says that timely and energetic execution of fiduciary responsibilities is to be pursued at all times. It also says service to public pension fund beneficiaries demands special sensitivity and compassion. By developing a policy that only states overpayments since 2014, I am very concerned that you may be making some interpretations that would allow you to not return all over contributions. Your code of ethics also says in those situations where the law is not clear, the best interests of the fund beneficiaries must be served. When this bill passed, I lost approximately 25% of my retirement that I had been promised contractually when I took the job 31 years ago. I am a longtime devoted employee and also a single mother of a disabled child. I already now have to work 7 additional years to make up for AB 197. Please don't make this worse and make me fight for my overcontributions to CICERA as well. Please tell me when you will follow your own policies and codes of ethics and reimburse me for all of the funds I overpaid. The next one is from Jerry Yoshioka, and he had submitted a question that he's asked for the question and answer to be placed into the record. His question was, can you clarify number 2 of the resolution? Does it mean that if one retired during the stay order, that an item such as on-call pay would be excluded from the pension from July 12, 2014 onward? The response to his question was, I understand this question was sent as public comment, but I wanted to respond to you now since the question is based on the proposed resolution language. To answer your question, the pensions for those who retired during the stay order period would be unaffected by the proposed resolution. We will be sure to mention that during the meeting tomorrow. The next comment is from Deborah Lewis, retirement board members. Thank you for having overpayment of retirement contributions attributable to on-call pay on the agenda. It appears that resolution 2021-5 will address overpayment for contributions from on-call pay made on and after July 12, 2014. When does CICERA plan to address the contributions for on-call and callback pay from prior to July 12, 2014? The next comment is from Maria P. Duazo. To the clerk of the board, I would like to submit my comments request regarding item 13 on this month's board agenda. I am a member that is affected by resolution 2021-5 you are proposing to adopt. I am in the group in the resolution that has overpaid on contributions on and after July 12, 2014, since my on-call and terminal pay elements are no longer includable in my final average salary. Thank you for moving this process forward now that decisions have been made that allow you to do so, with the understanding that there are elements of the AB 197 lawsuits that are still pending. I would like to formally ask the board to approve this resolution and start the processing of calculations of overpayments with interest that I and others made prior to July 12, 2014 for on-call and terminal pay elements that are no longer includable as well. The next public comment is from Julie Friedman. I am unable to attend the meeting because I am working tomorrow, but please include the following in public comment. My name is Julie Friedman. I have been a physician at CCRMC and in the health centers since 2005. I am writing to insist that our contributions to CSERA for our call pay and terminal pay from before 2013 must be returned to us. Over more than 7 years, I made these contributions on my call pay and towards terminal pay. Call pay was a substantial part of my compensation during that period. With that pay deemed no longer pensionable, those contributions were in excess. The overall value of my pension is decreased and not in accordance with the agreement I was working under while making those contributions. It is only fair and right that those excess contributions be returned with interest so that I can invest them elsewhere. Thank you. Next comment is from Adam Springer. Retirement board members, I see you have begun to address the overpayment of contributions on or after July 12, 2014. This is a first step. However, from 2012 to 2014, I have paid over $15,000 in contributions on-call pay and callback. This contribution I assumed to be retirable at the time it was taken. Now that this is not the case, my contributions need to be returned so I can fund my own retirement. This will severely impact my planned retirement in the coming years. I understand you can't change AB 197. However, you can at least return the collected money that current members have paid and that cannot be included in their current retirement calculations. Thank you. The next comment is from Dr. Annie Sherrill. Hello. I'd like to make a comment about AB 197. I am a family physician at CCRMC for 20 years. Before PEPRA, some of the work I did, like weekend rounds, was part of my regular work, although not in my regular hours. I made extra contribution to retirement for this work. This is hard-earned dollars I contributed since it was considered pensionable at the time. I sacrificed a lot of my family time doing that work. I humbly request that those dollars be returned to me. The next one is from Melanie Smith. Will the Brian Hast letter that was just read become part of the minutes so that the public can read it later? The next comment is from Jack Funk. I ask the board to keep in mind that the Supreme Court did not find that CSERA or the other retirement boards acted improperly in allowing pensionable items that may not have been required under the Ventura case. The court merely found that such items were not required under Ventura. Under California law, pensions may not be modified without a showing of miscalculation or fraud. The next comment is from Melissa Hagen. This is not logical. You took out cold, hard cash. If I had this money in my hand, I could have invested in a 401k. This is not fair. The next one is from Lacey Friedman. No, I demand a formal opinion. That is not enough. And the last written one we've received is from another one from Melanie Smith. How is a member of the public able to review these public comments later? Are they recorded as part of this meeting? And then, as I mentioned, we have one other member that would like to appear on video and make his public comment. So we will move him over now. Mr. Raleigh, you can now make your public comment.
You have 3 minutes, Mr. Raleigh. Thank you.
Thank you. I trust that you guys have received a letter that I sent a couple of weeks ago, signed by myself and Ruth Bennett. And I trust that you had the opportunity to read it. It pretty much lays out our entire argument. But to highlight a few things, when we were hired into the system and during our careers, we had no say, no decision power, nothing when it came to our pensions. These were decisions that were made by SACERA, by our employers, by legislators, by judges, but we had no say. We had no power or control over our retirement age. We became of retirement age and had to retire, and we retired under the rules that were there at the time, be it SACERA's rules, our employer's rules, Judge Flynn, whoever. But we retired under the rules at the time. To my way of thinking, it is only fair to go back to the point where the California Supreme Court issued their decision to have us pay what was overpaid to us. That is the point at which we were no longer in compliance with the law or a ruling like Judge Flynn's ruling or the appellate court. It was only at that point forward, from the California Supreme Court decision forward, that we were out of compliance. So it seems only fair that you only go back to that point. Secondly, when we retired, me and Ruth and some others in the estoppel class, we were required to sign an agreement stating that if we lost the lawsuit, that our pensions would be adjusted. We took that to mean they would be adjusted going forward. The agreement said nothing about having to pay money back. This is quite the hardship, as you can imagine. Had AB 197 never happened, I would be getting $2,000 a month more in my pension. And now I'm being asked to pay money back, going all the way back to the point that I retired. This is just cruel. I'm somewhat familiar with plan documents because I manage the deferred comp at Central Sand. And I am sure that you have some flexibility into determining what is fair without running afoul of your plan document. That's my position. I think it's the only fair and right thing to do is to go back to the point where we were out of compliance with laws and rulings and so forth. We had no other choice.
Excuse me, Mr. Rowley. Sorry, your 3 minutes are up.
Okay. Ruth Bennett has logged in. She had trouble getting logged in the beginning, and I think she would like to speak to you as well.
So is Ms. Bennett available at this point?
We are checking the attendee list right now.
All right. I can do that as well.
We don't see an attendee with that name.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it either.
I see Bennett's in the yolk. So I'm guessing, I don't know if that's it, but there's a Bennett there.
Yeah, I do see that.
Why don't you promote that individual and see if that's Ms. Bennett?
We have promoted that attendee. We're waiting for them to accept.
There's always a bit of a lag time. As we found yesterday, we used for the first time allowing public comment via Zoom, and there was a substantial lag time of admitting someone and them getting hooked up and audio as well.
So she has joined us. or at least I just saw her. Yeah, there she is. you're currently muted, so you'll need to unmute, Ms. Bennett. Yeah, you're currently on mute. Yeah, you'll need to unmute yourself. Thank you.
Send an invitation for her to unmute. Sometimes that's easier than they can just click that.
I don't know if you can do that, Christina. I can't.
Whoever is the, yeah. Whoever's
we did.
Okay.
Ms. Bennett, it appears that your microphone may not be working.
There is the possibility of her calling in as well, and I don't know if we're able to provide that phone number or, oh, here comes a helper. That's always great. Somebody with a, looks like a microphone and headphones. That'll make it easier.
Still can't hear you, Ms. Bennett.
Ms. Bennett, there's also an option, as Supervisor Anderson mentioned, of calling in. The phone number is at the top of the agenda with the access code.
No, that's okay. Why don't you call in, Ms. Bennett, if you can hear us? I think you can. Why don't you go ahead and avail yourself of that top of the agenda? There's a call-in number. Phone in and you can provide your public comment that way.
And the phone number is 669-900-6833. And I'll repeat that, 669-900-6833. And there is a webinar ID number, and that is 910-1425-2227. I'll repeat that ID, 910-1425-2227. And then a passcode. And the passcode is 799-330. And again, I'll repeat the passcode, 799-330. And I think we should be able to put that all in the chat as well. And I will see if I can do that. And hopefully those, although I don't know if the chat is visible to everyone who is watching, depends how we have this set up.
The chat is not visible to attendees, unfortunately.
Okay, so that doesn't help. But again, it is at the top of the agenda. Are there any other speakers that we could go to while we wait for Ms. Bennett to see if she can log in? The other possibility, Ms. Bennett, is if you, on your Zoom screen, hit the microphone, you may be able to select a different microphone for your device. If you hit the little arrow to the side of the microphone, if you're on a computer, it will let you select a microphone, and typically you want the same as the system or the same as your laptop. But you can also click switch to phone audio. And when you switch to phone audio, it will give you that telephone information as well. And that option. I've been doing too many Zoom calls this last.
Gotta say that. I am very impressed.
Yeah, you know, I have had so many workarounds when things have not worked out properly. So that's the other option, is just click the little arrow next to the microphone. And if it doesn't look, when you select a microphone, you're not able to select the microphone that looks like your laptop or your computer, then go down to switch to phone audio.
Yeah, I've got, you know, on mine, I've got the selection is the built-in microphone. So that's the term used, is your built-in both input.
Are you on an iPad, Scott?
No, I'm on my desktop.
You're on your desktop. Okay. Are you on a Microsoft desktop or an Apple desktop?
Apple.
Okay. Yeah. Well, funny. Mine's showing slightly differently, also on an Apple desktop.
You probably have a more recent version.
Maybe. Could be. But you probably just need to update your Zoom software. So maybe I updated your software sooner than you did. So
I need to update a lot of things, but Zoom software is right up there on that list. Christina, while we're trying to sort that out, are there any other public comments we've received that we can move to while we're waiting for Ms. Bennett?
No, we have not received any other public comments.
Okay, thank you. So Ms. Bennett, were you able to get the telephone instructions? You can signify by waving or something if you were able to get the telephonic instructions on how to dial in. Yes, great. You'll dial in. Thank you.
That looks like she's attempt.
Where's Todd when we need him?
With all due respect, I think Candace's knowledge has now rapidly lapped Todd's.
Yeah, she's a veritable fountain of information on this stuff. Very, very important.
Todd's decision to retire was not by accident.
Yes, you're exactly right, John.
The Supervisor Anderson bumped him out.
Doesn't look like it's working.
Doesn't seem like it's working. Right. Go ahead.
And we don't have chat even for us. So say the other option is if we had the chat available for us, she could chat because she's right now a panelist, but I'm not seeing that option. Have we disabled? Yeah,
we're not operating a chat on this.
Okay. Today. Yeah, the only thing I think the best we could do is suggest you log out and then try calling back in entirely. So if none of these other things are working.
You, if you have the ability, you can also send us an email that can be read to us, Ms. Bennett. That's an alternative as well.
And we did receive one other emailed public comment in the last couple minutes, if you'd like me to read that now.
Yeah, so before you do that, Ms. Bennett, just based on the technical constraint, why don't you go ahead and reduce your thoughts to an email if you can? Please send that in to public comment. We'll have it read to the board. And then in the meantime, while you're doing that, we can receive the other public comment. Thank you. So Christina, why don't you go ahead and provide the other public comment that you received?
Yes, and it looks like there are two emails, part one and part two. They're both from Lacey Friedman. Part one is, a member of board requested a second legal opinion of your inability to reimburse via IRS law. I requested as well. Please do not pass this now. Wait until second opinion is presented to us all. Your members require this. When will you get a second opinion? Part two, or a lawsuit will ensue.
And then let us know if you can, I'm sure you will, when you receive something from Ms. Bennett. Hopefully she's able to distill her thoughts into an email.
Well, and while we're working on this, if Harvey's available, and I know he's off camera for a moment, this was a question we asked Harvey early on because some of us really wanted to find a way to refund the money that was paid towards these benefits. And one of the questions I asked you, are you aware of any other jurisdictions that have confronted a similar situation and have found a way, a workaround to make that refund? Going back, you know, even, you know, pre-PEPRA contributions that people made that PEPRA then no longer made valid. And are you aware of any other of our CERL or other pension bodies in California that have figured out a way to make that type of a refund?
No, to my knowledge, Ms. Anderson, there are no other systems that are contemplating refunds prior to the effective date of PEPRA, AB 197. For most of them, the effective date is January 1 of 13. For SACERA, the effective date is July 12th of 2014 because of the stay order. But the other systems that I work with and anecdotally that I've heard about, and Karen Levy is also in communication with those others. She may have had other communications, but to my knowledge, no other CERL system is contemplating or making any refunds of contributions prior to the effective date of AB 197.
Okay, thank you for that, because I think that's really helpful for people to hear and understand. Other question, and maybe either, I don't know, Gail or whoever else has sent the notice to individuals who were in that interim period. We had one caller state that he understood that his pension would be adjusted, but he didn't understand that to mean that he might have to pay something back, that he might have been improperly paid. He assumed it was going forward. Do you happen to have the language? Because I know we've asked, and you've said to us over the last few months as we've been looking at this issue, that all of the retirees in that interim period were put on notice. Do you have the exact language, or is it available that we could just see or hear?
I don't have the exact language right in front of me at this time. I don't know if,
if Christine is able to.
Yeah.
No, it's just helpful to know. I know from my experience that sometimes I state things that are very clear to people, or very clear to me, what I assume people will interpret. And because I live and breathe government, legalese, all of those things, but to a lay person, and I don't mean in a derogatory way, but to someone who doesn't deal full-time with statutes, with retirement provisions, I just want to make sure it was clear to individuals that while we had this stay in place, not only would it be adjusted going forward, but there was the repayment potential as well of any funds that were improperly distributed.
I have pulled the acknowledgement up. It's on our website as a part of the retirement application packet. I can read it out loud if you would like.
Sure. I think it would be helpful for us to hear.
Sure. Go ahead. Go. Yeah, please do.
So the title of it is the Notice of Pending Lawsuit and Acknowledgement of Receipt. Notice of Pending Lawsuit. This notice of pending lawsuit is provided to you in the interest of keeping SACERA's retiring members informed of a pending lawsuit, which may result in changes to retirement calculations. The lawsuit was filed by the Contra Costa County Deputy Sheriff's Association and the United Professional Firefighters Local 1230 on behalf of all active and deferred members of SACERA to stop the implementation of Assembly Bill 197. AB 197 would prevent SACERA from following its current policy of including certain accrued leave payouts and pay received for services provided after normal working hours, for example, on-call pay, in the calculation of members' retirement allowances. In the lawsuit, the state attorney general has argued, and the court has agreed in a preliminary ruling issued on November 8, 2013, that these pay items should never have been included in retirement calculations. Further rulings are expected in the next several months. Final resolution in the courts could take several years. SACERA cannot predict the outcome of this lawsuit. Members who plan to retire should be aware of the lawsuit and the possibility that their retirement calculations may change depending on the final outcome of the lawsuit, specifically with respect to all items of compensation at issue, including terminal pay and on-call pay. One possible scenario is that the final outcome might require the exclusion of pay or a portion thereof from compensation for retirement purposes, even for those already in retired status. The court's stay order requires that SACERA continue to follow its pre-AB 197 policy on retirement calculations and is in effect until 60 days after the court enters judgment. SACERA will continue to follow its pre-AB 197 policy in accordance with the stay order. Please note that the final outcome of the lawsuit may require changes to the calculation of your benefits. Updates regarding the lawsuit are available on the SACERA website at www.sacera.org. And then acknowledgement of receipt and space provided for the member's signature and date.
You're on mute, Candace, I think, but while you're unmuting, that's remarkably clear to me. At least that's my first reaction to it. And I remember reading it before. But
But the only thing that I find a little concerning is it says your pension will be adjusted, but it doesn't say, and that may include what you've already received in this interim period, or that you may be required to pay back money that was improperly paid to you. And so I'm finding that's what I was really listening for. It makes it very clear that their pension will be adjusted, but I did not hear anything that would put me on notice that not only will my pension be adjusted, but that I would be required to pay back any additional sums beyond what I was entitled to. So that's, again, what I was listening for.
All right. Any other thoughts on that? So do we have Ms. Bennett's comment yet?
We do not.
Well, seems to me, I think in the interest of time, notwithstanding the technical difficulty, that we need to at least move on to the discussion of the item before us. If we receive her comment during the pendency of the discussion, I would ask that you interrupt or send me a note, Christine, and we'll have it read, right? But I think we should move on to consideration of the item if there's no other public comment.
Is it possible to call Ms. Bennett and put her on speakerphone for us to call her? Do we have a phone number for her?
I don't know if we do. Do we have a phone number for her, Christine?
Yeah, so she can make her comments on speakerphone that we can all hear.
I do not have a phone number. I'm checking the letter that she submitted previously to the board, but I did just get an email directly to me, not to public comment, that it looks like it is. Okay, it's from her. She's saying, I just wanted to reiterate David Raleigh's message. I was never advised that I would have to pay money back.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Louis, for the suggestion. And I'm glad she was able to get through and kind of distill it down. So, okay. So how would we like to proceed on the item?
I'm concerned that people weren't aware that, or necessarily made aware that they would have to pay monies back. I think it's something we all assume because we deal in pensions and we understand that if someone's been overpaid, that they're required. And I've had it expressed to me is the IRS requires us to recapture that funding. And we've had several cases come before us where it's been required. So I guess that would be my first question to legal counsel, to Karen or Harvey. Are we required to, in that interim period, take back the money that was overpaid? Or is there any ability for us to provide some leniency?
I can address that. And so when it comes to, as you mentioned, we have had in the past situations of overpayment of benefits. We do have a policy on this that follows the IRS guidelines regarding what to do in those situations. There is no requirement to provide prior notice that something might get changed prospectively or retroactively. Sometimes we don't even know, SACERA doesn't even know that there might be an overpayment that will occur in the future. So there is no requirement for prior notice for us to make the correction. When it comes to the recoupment of past overpayments, the IRS does require that the system take reasonable steps to recover the overpayments with appropriate interest. And that is what we've done in the past. That would be our recommendation in this case. This really boils down to 7 retirees who received the estoppel benefit that was excess terminal pay that was created by Judge Flynn's order that never existed before, which order is now ordered by the Supreme Court to be vacated as of its inception.
All right. Any other questions of Karen on that point or any other? Do we have a motion that anyone wishes to make on the item?
Well, and here's my other question. I know David asked if we could have more of a written legal opinion as to why we're not able to refund pre-PEPRA. Similarly, why we're required to claw back monies that were inappropriately paid out. I'm just wondering if we should defer this pending the receipt of that. I think it's important from the member's standpoint, but I also anticipate there could be litigation, and I just want to make sure that we're doing what we need to do to protect our members as well as apply the law correctly. So that would be my only suggestion of deferring it, a month to sort of address some of these issues.
David, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I don't know when the appropriate time is for me to say this, and I was going to say this until we discuss our views on the matter for a vote. But I think it's, I should go ahead and say it now, if that's okay.
Go ahead,
Mr. Chair. All right, so this current proposal I would vote no on. And I have to speak up for our legacy members. This situation is fundamentally wrong, and it's been explained to us that this has been imposed by the state legislature and the Cal Supreme Court. But this current proposal harms CICERA members, and our members will not be made whole by it. And I think you all understand what I mean by that with respect to being made whole. So for years, going back to the Ventura decision in 97 up to 2014, our legacy employees have paid pension contributions towards pay items, terminal pay, call, etc., that are now deemed to be no longer pensionable. Legacy employees were mandated to make these contributions. There was no opting out. There was no choice. Money was taken out of their paychecks for this. This proposal adds to the damage already done to our legacy CICERA members by AB 197. AB 197 eliminated the expected pension benefit that was paid for in advance by our members and their employers. On top of the lost pension benefit, our legacy CICERA members are being told that they will not get their money back. That was the contributions made prior to 2012. And this proposal by CICERA seals the fate. Instead of making payroll contributions to a benefit that our legacy members will not realize in the future, our members could have put this extra money to use towards helping to cover bills, help fund their children's education, or apply that money to other retirement strategies. So this is fundamentally not right. And what can Cicero do to make it right? I believe our legacy members, Cicero members, deserve better. And per our policy, overpayments of excess contributions must be resolved and returned to the members. So I've been told that Cicero does not have legal standing to do this. And I would like to see a statement from whatever authority prevents Cicero from refunding these contributions. This is so serious and impacts so many of our members that this has to be cleaned up. And pension values have gone down. There's a lot of people hurting from this. And so whatever Cicero can do within its power to make things right, that is my request on behalf of our legacy members. And thank you for hearing me out.
Great. Thank you, David. Are there any, I realize we don't have a motion on the table, but are there any other preliminary thoughts or comments that trustees have either on what David just said or on this subject in general? Louis.
I do. I just want to agree with Candace. If we could get a legal opinion saying about the clawback and it's IRS doing it, and we're obligated to do it because of IRS.
Okay. Any other thoughts or comments from trustees?
Not to overdo the discussion, but I'm sympathetic to the fairness argument. I don't dismiss that for a minute. I think, on the face, it appears as if it's somehow possibly an arbitrary decision by Cicero. But I think it's worth considering the other entities that are involved, the documents that we use to run our own situation, which are subject to IRS regulations, subject to state regulations, subject to CERL regulations. And I think we need to, I have no objection to clarifying an opinion if somebody wants to, but we need to consider the fact that we can't risk running afoul of the Internal Revenue Service and potentially getting into another fight with them just on the basis of saying it's not fair. We think it's not fair. There are a lot of things that I think people deal with in this world that are not fair, and I am sympathetic to the argument. But if the IRS is potentially or could potentially see Cicero as a target in the future, I'm not sure that's a hill worth dying on. So, I have no objection to getting further clarification if we want to from counsel, but fairness is not the only thing to be considered.
All right. Thank you, Jerry.
I appreciate that, Jerry, but I'd like, so let's bring in the IRS to tell us.
I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that we continue this item, that we have our legal counsel provide a legal memorandum that we can share with the public that clearly defines what our ability is to refund and to what dates any of these payments made toward benefits that are not realized upon retirement because of HEPRA or court decisions and whatever else we want to throw in there. I think it's just important that we, as trustees of Cicero, that we answer these questions because it is, it was my first day. I think we all, you all heard me. I think we're in a closed session where I was really concerned when the decision was rendered that we did not have the ability to just pay people back for the money that was paid. And it was in a slightly different context, but when we aren't able to offer that benefit. So I think it's important that we provide the legal basis for it. And I don't think that what we have in our packet today is sufficient to provide that information. I think a lot of us have received that information in our closed sessions and through documents that have not been made public because they were part of our closed session discussion and pending litigation issues. So that would be my motion to continue this item, request a new date on this, as well as some more additional information from our council that supports the position we're being asked to take.
Second.
All right, so we've got a motion and a second to continue the item and to request, and I think we should be clear on this, to request an opinion from our council that summarizes the state of the law applicable to the decision regarding refunds of overpayments and provides the basis for the constraints that, the constraints that exist that would prevent a more robust or a different overpayment. I may have made that too muddy, but I just want to be clear that our lawyers understand what's being requested in the motion. So Karen and Harvey,
can I addend that? Or propose, I would like to see a statement. Again, I would like to see a statement from whatever authority prevents Acera from doing what people would normally feel would be the right thing to do. So if it's the IRS that's getting in the way, I would like to have a statement from the IRS saying there's no way you can do this or you risk your status as a nonprofit entity or whatever. Is that possible?
Well, let me jump in before Harvey or Karen do. I'm not certain the IRS or any other state or local agency would be in a position to opine on it, but we do have the ability to have our counsel as well as our independent tax counsel weigh in with written legal opinion about what is or isn't allowed by the law. The IRS will always tell you they don't give advisory opinions and neither do courts. But so I think there's a constraint in that way. But Harvey or Karen, your thoughts on what David suggested?
I'm sorry.
As far as getting a ruling or an advisory from the IRS, we would have to consult with our outside tax counsel regarding that.
And then I was just going to suggest too that we did have a former trustee also provide sort of his legal opinion as well. I would hope that you could, in the memo that's prepared, sort of address some of the legal issues raised by Brian as well. Just again, I'm hoping that we can get this resolved and figure out really what this, I think people want to be heard, but they also want to really understand what appears to be an unfair decision. And that's something that, again, we grapple with all the time in Acera because we do have these constraints. So I think it'd be very helpful to include response to other, and not just Brian's, but anyone else who has emailed, if we can serve as part of that, make sure that each of the points raised is addressed.
Well, and also, the concern has been raised that we are in danger of action by the IRS or state entity or whatever. And so if there is a potential danger there, I think that we need to dig as deep as we can to see if that is real. And so that's why I'm asking for the statements. If the IRS really has issue with reimbursement of funds prior to 2012, I'd like to hear that from them. And if they say, well, that we would look unfavorably at that, then that's one thing. If they say, well, we really don't have an opinion, then I think that gives us more leeway in what we can do.
David, I think in my lay perspective, I would say their response is very likely to say, we won't render an opinion. Not that they don't have one, and you run the risk of finding out what their opinion is after you do it. And that may not be the order in which you want to do this. But I'm not saying we shouldn't get our own legal opinion and a risk analysis from counsel.
I'm just saying, I think there's an inherent danger in saying to the IRS, we're thinking about doing the following. How do you feel about it?
Jerry, in my long career dealing with the IRS on pension issues, you would never get an answer to this kind of a very specific question from the IRS. You have to go to counsel.
Yeah, so I absolutely agree with that. Just to try to corral this a little bit, I think both of our very experienced and learned legal counsel that are listening to this have an understanding of what the issues are, what the concerns are that have been expressed by several board members about the repayment issue, the refund issue, if you will. So they have in mind the points need to be raised. As I understand the motion and the second, it is directed to our legal counsel to provide a legal opinion in a form that can be distributed to the public that addresses the issues regarding overpayments, the legal constraints regarding what can be done or what can't be done and why, and what the source of that is. And if I've misstated that, Karen or Harvey, stop me, but that's what my understanding is, the charge is. I think it's sufficiently clear by the motion and the second of what the direction is to our counsel. If they can comply with that, please let us know that that's something you can do. If not, let's talk about what we can do. Even before we vote. I want people to be clear about what we're doing before we take a vote here.
Understood from our point of view.
Okay. All right. So that's clarity. Is there any further discussion on the motion? I don't see any hands up or additional thoughts. So let's call the question and bring it to a vote. On the motion to continue and obtain an opinion from our legal counsel, that would be in a form available for distribution to the public. Anderson.
Aye.
Finley.
Aye.
Gordon.
Aye.
Holcomb.
Aye.
Kroll.
Aye.
McDonald.
Aye.
Phillips.
Aye.
Watts.
Aye.
And Powell.
Aye.
All right, motion passes unanimously. So good discussion. We'll look forward to when that comes back before us. We'll take it up at that time.